It's time for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. And it looks like Republicans and Democrats may have reached an agreement on extending corporate tax breaks. But President Obama has threatened to veto that bill. It would be the third and biggest veto of his presidency. Then, even though voters are fed up, so they say, with partisan politics, data shows that this past midterm election has had the lowest percentage of voters for third-party candidates since 1998. Paul Singer joins us every week at this time to talk about the latest out of Congress. Paul, it's good to have you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Veronica. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. So looking at some of the events in Ferguson this week, in light of past discussions in Congress, we go back to September. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul called police militarization in Ferguson out of control. There was a hearing to discuss that. Where is that conversation right now in Congress?
Nowhere. Congress, as you are certainly aware, has an exceptionally short attention span. They had a bunch of hearings where they thought that it was worth revisiting this program. This is a federal government program that basically allows, in fact, encourages the military to provide surplus equipment, excess equipment to local police departments. They call it the 1033 program. And in the end, I mean, Congress, after a couple of weeks of hand-wringing, I think concluded that there really wasn't much they could do about it. The local police departments like the program because it gets them hardware that they say is important for police safety and security and for carrying out their law enforcement mission. Pentagon still likes it, and you have to figure out a way to reopen a law if you wanted to rewrite it. And, you know, Congress isn't very good at reopening laws at this point. It is actually, you know, part of a defense statute, so you can't just wave a magic wand and have it go away. What has been suggested is that the outcome will be more oversight, possibly by Congress. The president has put together a group within the White House to look at the program and see if it's being managed properly. Yeah, that's it. You know, kind of a nip and tuck at the edges, but I wouldn't expect Congress to do anything formal.
In terms of things that were big and dramatic in Congress, at least from this end, Chuck Hagel, defense secretary, is out, reports saying that President Obama asked him to step down. What is your take on that move, and what was it supposed to accomplish?
Well, you know, you can look at it a couple of ways. First of all, it is not uncommon for the someone in the cabinet to, you know, move right after the elections. It happens pretty regularly. And, you know, Hagel was always kind of an odd choice for that job anyway. He's not known as a sort of square edges manager. He has always been a bit of a shoot from the lip kind of guy, which is dangerous for the defense secretary. And I think, you know, the reports are that the administration was really taking an awful lot of blame for not handling ISIS properly, the Islamic State militants in Iraq and Syria, and that somebody had to take a fall for it, and they thought Hagel was just really not handling the job well. Keep in mind, Hagel also, you know, was, when he was sworn in, his whole effort was about trying to reduce the size of the military to deal with a smaller budget. You know, again, a very difficult initiative to move, particularly when you're asking the military to do more and to stay on in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, I think it is some mix of it was time for him to go, people were unhappy with his performance, and the White House figured this was the best opportunity to have him leave. Now, of course, replacing him will be a bit of a challenge, but so it goes.
Well, if that move was supposed to signal, you know, the Obama administration is looking at its foreign policy and trying to fine-tune it, it seems as though that message has been a little muddled. At least it seems like there's an emerging critique right now pointing at the White House's foreign policy and saying that this is a tight unilateral group doing the foreign policy and that maybe more changes are necessary. Are you hearing grumblings like that?
Well, I mean, that's been going on for a long time. This administration has, but again, I'm not sure this is different than other administrations, if you think back, but the criticism is this administration is a very tight circle of advisors who are largely campaign and political people, not management experts, not government experts, and that the cabinet officials are sort of left out in the cold when decisions are being made. Now, I will tell you that, as I said, the Bush administration got criticized for some of the same stuff, years ago, although it was Dick Cheney is very much and has been for years was very much an expert in sort of government management. He actually set up one of the first task forces in government management in the Ford administration. So he had a lot of hands-on in the agencies that maybe Obama does not have, and Obama doesn't really have in his White House anybody doing that stuff. But nevertheless, you know, it is true that Obama has a very tight network of advisors who have come with him from a long ways back, and maybe they're not the best people to manage big government agencies. But again, this is something that we run into with a lot of administrations, and it happens pretty regularly.
Now, moving on, it looks like the president could be getting his veto pen ready for a tax break bill, an agreement that went on apparently without White House approval on tax breaks. Yeah. Can you lay that out for us?
Republicans and Democrats, particularly Majority Leader Harry Reid's staff, were working on a tax extenders bill. This again, fairly common at the end of the year, the way Congress has been operating the past few years. Every year they have to basically extend a bunch of tax provisions. They're going to expire. And if they don't extend them, it becomes very complicated in the new tax season. In this case, apparently what happened is everybody agreed, that is everybody in Harry Reid's office and the Republicans agreed, to extend a bunch of tax breaks for corporations, stuff like a research and development tax credit and a small business tax credit that lets them basically deduct anything they buy. And there was not enough goodies for the other side, that is, particularly for low-income individuals, making permanent the child tax credit, stuff that the Democrats really wanted. And the only way you get one of these tax bills done is that everybody gets a few goodies, and then you pass it. And you'll note that, of course, despite all of our concerns about spending and budget deficits, et cetera, this will be a $400 billion bill over 10 years, and it won't be offset with anything, which is, again, pretty much classic. And Obama, I guess, at the end decided this wasn't enough in it for enough sweeteners for the poor and the middle class. And so he's now saying he's going to veto it. That has sent everybody back to the table to try to renegotiate. We'll see what happens. Again, it's pretty important to business to get this thing passed. There's a lot of support for a lot of these tax cuts on both sides of the aisle. My suspicion is they'll just sort of sweeten it up and pass it.
Was this significant at all that Harry Reid negotiated this deal without seemingly the White House's stamp of approval?
Yeah, it's a little weird. You would expect Reid to be more cautious of not trying to get crosswise with the administration. On the other hand, it is possible, and I'm making this up as I go along, so I can't swear this is true, but it is possible that this is the kind of fight that Obama wants and that the Democrats want Obama to make for the new Congress, which is, this is Obama saying, I'm going to veto this because it does not do enough for the middle class and does too much for corporations. That's a good message for the Democrats. They want to push that message in advance of the 2016 elections, that the Republicans are all about corporations, not regular people. So a veto fight on this topic may not be a bad thing for the White House.
And on the other hand, does it maybe signal that Senate Democrats are going into looking ahead to January and feeling maybe more conciliatory, knowing that they're not top dogs in the Senate anymore?
Well, sure. I mean, you get your tail kicked, right? You argue, you may not feel like you've got all that much to give. On the other hand, I mean, again, I think this is the Senate Democrats' best opportunity to make some deals now. I mean, they're going to be in much worse shape in January. At the moment, they still have all of their Democrats seated. So if they're going to get anything, get a good deal, now's the best time to get it. If the Republicans are going to give them one, they might take it. But again, I think part of this is this whole issue of, I think the Democrats and Obama really do want to make the case that we are the party of the the middle class and the working poor, and those guys, they're the party of the rich.
And finally, before we let you go, Paul, you just published a piece with new data on the number of low votes for third-party candidates. It's a bit of a quandary about why this is. What can you tell us about that?
It is. I mean, there was seven million people voted for third-party and independent candidates for Senate and governor in 2010. This year, it was closer to 4 million. And there's a bunch of reasons for it. Low turnout overall, of course, is part of it. But it's also, states are making it harder for independent candidates to get on the ballot. States like California have new laws where you go to a primary, everybody's in the primary, but in the general election, only the top two candidates get in the general election. That means there is no third-party candidate on the ballot at all. As one of my sources said, you know, 20% of Americans didn't have an opportunity to vote for a third-party candidate. So it's interesting. I think it's also hard for third parties to really make enough serious campaign noise to get the attention and get the votes. Sooner or later, people get to the polls and they say, "Yeah, I'm not going to waste my vote on somebody who can't win." So that's what seems to be happening.
Well, Paul, thanks a lot for being with us and have a great holiday.
Thanks, Veronica. You too. Enjoy and be safe.
We've been speaking with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time to give us the latest on our representatives in Washington.